Time to welcome some new takes.
Right this way.
To Bad Take Boulevard.
If only there was something in your head to control the things you say.
It's the dumbest argument ever.
With the Killer Bees.
Can I just say that I'm an idiot for listening to you?
All right, Bad Take Boulevard every Thursday at 2. This one was sent to us. It didn't need to be sent to us, but it was Skip Bayless. Skip Bayless, Monday night. It's really more the timing more than anything else. I think Blakers had a good point, too, about you can't really read the tone on a tweet. But Skip Bayless immediately went to what's the NFL going to do considering the postponement of the rest of the game, how this late in the season a game of this magnitude is crucial to the regular season outcome, which suddenly seems so irrelevant. Probably should have led with that last sentence instead of ending with that last sentence. In a moment where everybody was wondering if DeMar Hamlin was going to die on the field, Skip Bayless was talking about the scheduling of games and, you know, probably something that you wait for the next day on or you hear some more about DeMar Hamlin on. We've talked about it on Tuesday, if we're being completely honest. But the timing to me is where Skip really screwed up on this tweet.
Yeah, I think so. And I think also because going into it, there was already a preconceived notion that this is the controversial click-happy clickbait kind of thing that Skip does. So people we're just sitting there waiting to pounce on any misstep that Skip does. Not that he doesn't deserve it for a lot of the tweets that he puts out there, but for this one, the more that the three of us were analyzing it in our pre-show meeting, that's what I said. I mean, I think when you can't tell tone and you could have easily have just reversed the 2 points being made and started with that the only thing that matters is the health of this young man, that this would be a totally different conversation. So I think that the easy thing to do when everybody is so on pins and needles waiting to react to anything, they reacted quickly and they pounced on Skip Bayless. I think after further review, I don't think it was nearly as bad as everybody wanted him fired. I don't think it was a fireable offense, but it was a stupid thing to do.
Yeah, the timing was really the stupid thing. I mean, it's a conversation that you're going to have the next day. The tone, you can't read it. Leading with that last sentence was pretty silly as well.
I want to piggyback on that because one of the things in watching it all unfold that night and subsequently after the fact was the fact that guys like Skip Bayless, guys that in the media that we know and some we're just familiar with, going out and basically tweeting and making statements and on TV saying just absolutely outlandish things, worried more about football than the young man's life. But the thing that bothers me is right after that, people would follow up and say these racist so-and-sos and make it about race. This has nothing to do with the can we separate race and stupidity?
Are you scared of saying white people?
No, but it wasn't all just white people. I saw it, but you know, I saw it regardless of who said it. Someone in the chat following it and other people, some with those little blue check marks that mean less now, but people coming back going, that the typical racist response from this or that race or things like that. It had nothing to do with race. It had everything to do with stupidity. Yeah. People reacting quickly by the seat of their pants and then knee-jerk reaction with stupid comments. That's what it's about. Unintelligent comments, not about race.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. A lot of times we go to that very, very quickly. A lot of times it is racist.
Sometimes like, if it is, I'm quick to call it that myself.
I like to have those conversations. I really do. Like I'm half Mexican. I come from a Mexican. My mom's side of the family's Mexican. She was a born Rios. My dad's side's white. I like to have those conversations. But a lot of times people are too quick to go there when it has nothing to do with racism at all. 1-970 texting in a bad take, and you can too. 713-780-3776 or tweet at Pac-Man Joel. He says, Bad Take Boulevard, Paul Gallant, thinking the Texans should bring in David Carr's brother, Derek, and Davante Adams in a package deal. I hadn't heard Paulie say this. I didn't realize that Paulie said
it. I saw it on the text message a couple times today. People have texted us that a couple times today.
I believe what 1970 says, that Paulie has laid it on the list. Paulie has made Bad Take Boulevard. You're not bringing in David Carr's brother. No.
An apartment?
It's an apartment. Paulie's an apartment guy. Maybe
he is. Oh, he's a townhouse guy.
Maybe a studio.
Yeah, he's a townhouse guy.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. Townhouse and Bad Take Boulevard for Paul Gallant.
I could not be more on board with this being a bad take. If you're rebuilding and you're trying to build a young roster and you're also looking for financial flexibility down the road for when you truly identify things you really need and you can go get in free agency, which they haven't been able to do, the last thing you need to do is two mega contracts like those two guys.
Yeah.
Stop it. That's the worst possible scenario for what the Texans need right now.
Yeah, the money is just doesn't make a whole lot of sense from where the Texans are
going.
And we've
talked about it from an AFC perspective, too. Look at the quarterbacks you're trying to compete with where you got to be a top 10 type quarterback. Carr was bubbling before with us on the outside looking in on 10. He's probably down that list even further now.
His peak year, he was a top 10 quarterback. Yeah. Barely. But that was the only year. Like, it doesn't move the needle at all. And it's not the direction the Texans are going
in.
How about this one for Bad Take Boulevard? I saw this one out on the interwebs from a local media personality. Ooh. The Texans should have been headed to the playoffs this year.
Oh, stop it. Someone said that?
Someone said that recently. Like, it's one thing to say that at the beginning of the season. Like, still probably bad takey. Very bad takey.
Yeah.
Lands you on the list bad even back then. But saying that recently, after 17 games in the NFL season, after 17 weeks of the NFL season, Texans will be playing their 17th game this week. The Texans should have been headed to the playoffs this year. In what universe, in what world should the Texans be heading to the playoffs this year?
If Patrick Mahomes was the Texans quarterback, do you think they would have made the playoffs this year?
No.
Because I don't either.
No.
I think they would have had a fun season. They would have been in the race, but I don't think they would have made it.
He would have thrown for 7,000 yards because they would have been playing from behind in every single game. But yeah, they're not winning a whole
seven,
lot
eight
of games.
Maybe
I slightly questioned when Jeremy said if the Rockets added James Harden, they'd be a playoff team. I would highly question if Patrick Mahomes was a Texan and someone said that they'd be a playoff team because they wouldn't sniff it.
Oh, I think that. I mean, I would be confident they'd win at least six games.
I could say that, but still not sniffing.
I think that's sniffing the playoffs.
No way. You can't even.
I guess I don't know. What in the AFC is sniffing the playoffs right now? And the NFC, six is missing by two.
Nine wins is going to get you into the playoffs.
Yeah, six is still not very close.
But I think eight's sniffing. I don't think anything close to that.
I don't know. They might have had a race, but I certainly don't think they'd have been in.
No. Someone local?
Someone local.
Definitely wasn't on the highway.
No. Actually not.
Shocking.
He's not on the radio a whole lot. Next one on the list, Bly Madris, who the Astros traded cash for the Detroit Tigers, which, by the way, the Tigers won that trade by getting cash for trading away Bly Madris. The Astros traded for this guy.
I have no idea.
They traded for him a couple days ago. Anyways, he's a backup outfielder, plays first base a little bit sometimes as well, hits left-handed, throws right-handed. He's only had a cup of coffee in the big leagues. If you look at his major league career, they all came last year. 39 games with the Pirates, had 123 plate appearances, hit below the Mendoza line, 177, 266 slugging. And his minor league numbers aren't really even that great. Like, they're not very good, actually. This is nothing more than an organizational depth move. Like, they're going to play him in Sugarland. Like, he's an emergency dude, not going to be on the opening day roster. I saw some people who talk about the Astros quite a bit saying that this move for Bly Madris
means Yuli's trading. Gone?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah. Like, how do you jump to that conclusion? Bly Madris isn't going to be on the opening day roster.
Get out of here.
There's a good chance he's not even on the 40 man.
I was reading the tea leaves going, if this is Bad Take Boulevard, there's no way someone would go that far.
They put two and two together that the Astros trading cash for Bly Madris, who's like on his seventh organization in Major League Baseball in his career, that this is the indicator that the Astros will not sign Yuli Gurriel. The Astros might not sign Yuli Gurriel, and I think it might be trending that way, but it's not because they traded cash for Bly Madris.
Wasn't the because the Red Sox, I think, were kicking the tires on Yuli.
Were they?
I think so, recently. Yeah, I mean, look, it's one thing to say Yuli, you're going to lose Yuli. But whatever this dude's name is that I had no idea
Bly
they even
Madris.
Made a move for.
I like his name.
What was our guy last year that I couldn't stand that they finally, he was still on the roster per se, but he was.
Was it Ronel Garcia? I think it was Garcia.
It was. No, you had a nickname for.
Was he a pitcher or was
he? No, he was an infielder. It was a utility player.
I'm pretty sure you're not talking about Dupont.
No.
I'm pretty sure that that's who I'm talking about.
You sure? I thought, no. Well, you had a nickname for him, whatever it was. But that's
I had a nickname for him?
Yeah, it was the same thing. And he ended up playing
in Sugar Land. Oh. The guy I'm talking about was 2 years ago. The guy that you're talking about was Nico Badrum.
Yes, Badrum. Yes, there you
Badrum.
Go.
Yeah, this I forgot about Nico
this
Badrum.
This was a less than Nico Badrum type move. Stop it. That's ridiculous.
I forgot all about Nico Badrum.
I didn't.
What was
your bad nicknames are what make me
what
make
was your
stick.
I mean, bad, literally speaking.
Yeah.
What was your best Nico Badrum moment as a Houston Astro?
Then he made the roster, and he kept playing, and Dusty kept giving guys days off so he could play.
I don't know if this one really can be a bad take yet, because it literally has not happened. But Jake Paul making news today
that he's heading
to the professional fighters. I don't dislike Jake Paul. I just think he's a fraud as a fighter. I do want to fight him because it means significant money if I do. I would step toe-to-toe in the squared circle or the octagon with Jake Paul. Jake Paul is headed to the MMA. He signed a deal with the Professional Fighters League. He actually got like ownership stake in this too. He's going to be trying MMA. And look, they're probably going to spoon feed him certain fighters, attention, bunch of people watching the PFL. I can't imagine that he's going to be taken seriously as a mixed martial artist. I hope more than anything that Jake Paul fights a real MMA dude, that he fights a real mixed martial artist, because Jake Paul fighting a real MMA dude will show how much of a bad take it is for him to be dabbling in the MMA game.
But if you're a bigger guy and they say it, all it takes is landing one big blow and you can hold your own on someone that wants to grapple, don't you think he's got a puncher's chance?
You got a puncher's chance, but he's not a legit MMA dude. I think you would beat Jake Paul in a fight.
I appreciate the support.
I really do.
I don't think I'd ever want to do that. But
I really, why?
Well, like, I mean, $1 million? You said, for $1 million, my wife would push me into the ring.
I would fight Jake Paul for $1 million.
I know you would.
I don't think I would win, if I'm being honest. Jake Paul towers over me. He's a pretty big dude. I wouldn't win that fight, but I'd fight him for $1 million. I do think he's a fraud of a combat fighter, but I do appreciate how good he is at marketing his name. All right, that's Bad Take Boulevard. We do it every Thursday at 2. If you have some bad takes throughout the week, just send them on Twitter at Pac-Man Joel, and he'll get you taken care of. How would you feel? Jim Harbaugh is so thirsty to be back in the NFL. How would you feel if Jim Harbaugh is the next coach of the Houston Texans? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Jim Harbaugh wants to get back into the NFL. If you don't believe me, just ask him. Jim Harbaugh has put stories out there for the last two coaching cycles that he wants an NFL job. He wants one badly. Last year, he was involved with every single team, but no one ever even, I don't even think anybody interviewed him last year, or at least had him as a finalist for their jobs, yet he wanted back in the NFL. Same thing this year, where it's been reported that Jim Harbaugh, if he gets offered an NFL job, he's going to take the job. There's also been reports that he's met with Dave Tepper, the Carolina Panther owner. I can't imagine who put those stories out there that Harbaugh and Dave Tepper had a conversation. Look, I'm kidding a bit here. I mean, I believe it. But Jim Harbaugh has been a good coach in the NFL. He's been a good coach in college. I mean, he's been really good, actually. You go back to what he did, I mean, just recently in Michigan, where he's had them in the college football playoff. Last year, they finished ranked third in the country. This year, they're going to be very similar. But if you look at his 4 years in the NFL, all with San Francisco, the dude was in the playoffs 3 of the 4 years. He got fired after an 8-8 season. That's because he and Balky didn't see eye to eye. 13-3, 11-4-1, 12-4, 8-8. He's got a 69 win percentage in his NFL head coaching career, 4 seasons. Has been to 2 NFC championship games and a Super Bowl.
This is not Urban Meyer trying to take a swing at NFL. This is a guy that's been there, done that, and has done it, like you said, fairly well. Got to a Super Bowl. Had a San Francisco team that people were talking about having longevity for being there for a while. This is a guy there's a reason why more teams than not that need a coach are going to look at and possibly interview Harbaugh. The worst problem you got with Harbaugh is he's thirsty and you don't know how long he's going to stay at any job that he takes. But I think that as much as he was going back to his alma mater and this was one of his dream scenarios, if indeed he was going to leave
San Francisco.
I don't
think it was that dreamy. I think he wanted to stay at San Francisco.
Right, but I'm saying once he lost in the San Francisco battle with Trent Baalke and he lost out and they got rid of him, I think that this was the best case scenario. He keeps his name on the radar and on the map. He takes over a premier program in college football. He's been there, done that as a player. So he's going in with some caveat that people like him and they're going to support him. And you know what? He's gotten there a couple of times and realized now with NIL and all the different things and still competing against the Alabamas and the Georgias and the Ohio States that he's basically playing shorthanded.
I think Michigan is the only college job he would have gone to. After he went from Stanford to San Francisco back into college
football.
But I think he did it reluctantly. I don't think he wanted to go. There just wasn't a job out there for him to take in the NFL.
There was no job to take in the NFL, and this was at least a premier-type job, and it was a great story, and it was something the media was going to be all over. And if he did get success there, he would be the guy getting full credit for it.
Yeah.
It just he didn't take him over the mountaintop. He got him to the mountaintop, close as he could get, and then got his doors blown up.
It sounds like we are in agreement on what we think of Harbaugh as a coach. Like, he is a good coach. He's a quality NFL coach. It's not an Urban Meyer situation where he's this college-minded guy. He's got history in the NFL. He's got 4 years under his resume in the NFL, three of those being very, very good. Was a game away from winning a Super Bowl, was twice a game away from going back to another Super Bowl. And, you know, Brendan probably doesn't want Jim Harbaugh to leave Michigan since he likes that program. Probably doesn't want him to be in the NFL, doesn't want him to be the head coach of the Houston Texans. But how would you feel? 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. How would you feel if Jim Harbaugh is the next Texans head coach?
I would like it. I'd be fine with it. I think that, as we were talking about before the show, I think that there's not as many names as is normally out there, but there's a few hot names that are out there. Obviously, Sean Payton's at the top of the list, but I am not on board with, and will never be for, the Texans having to give up draft capital to get their next head coach because they have too many holes to fill in a roster that's too thirsty for any kind of talent they can get on it. I don't see them giving away picks to get a coach. So if it's not going to be Sean Payton, Harbaugh's going to be right there near the top of the list. And again, unlike a sexy name from college football that fell flat on his face and worse in Urban Meyer, you're getting a guy that had success at Stanford. You're getting a guy that had success in the NFL previously. You're getting a guy that can actually analyze talent and have a locker room that can get behind him and buy into what he's doing, and he understands more modern-day football. I think you could do a lot worse than getting a Jim Harbaugh to be the next guy to carry the torch as the head coach of the Houston Texans.
Harbaugh wouldn't be at the top of my list. There's names that I like more. You're right about, like, the sexy names, though. This coaching carousel does not have the sexy names. It doesn't have the buzz. Outside of Sean Payton, like, what's the sexy name that's out there? Like, DeMeco Ryans? That to me, is
that's
only
one of them.
And that, I think that's only sexy in Houston. Like, I think because he's a former Houston Texan.
Because people know him as a player.
Like, is that a sexy name in Indy? I don't really think it is.
No.
Like, I understand he's one of the – their defense is really, really playing well. He's the helm of that defense. I don't think DeMeco Ryans' name carries clout nationally as much as it does
even
in the city.
Even the retreads, if you think about it, no one wants Jason Garrett.
Yeah, there's not a Doug Peterson
out there. Bill Cowher
– Harbaugh is the
era
retread.
Is over. Right.
Harbaugh is the retread.
The most modern, sexy named retread that you have right now is Harbaugh.
And I don't even think that's as sexy as Peterson. Like, Doug Peterson last year, I think, was sexier than Harbaugh. Even Brian Daboll has been sexy. Eric Bieniemy has been a sexy name in the past.
I was going to say Bieniemy in the past, but not now.
Yeah, like, all of the sex with Bieniemy has worn down when it comes to his name. I think Harbaugh is, like, from a name perspective, cachet perspective, the second most, the second biggest name out of the market, other than Sean Payton. And we don't realistically think that Sean Payton would be a Houston Texan. And a lot of that's two things, I think. Sean Payton, I think, is going to have better opportunities with a team that's built to win. Secondly, I don't think the Houston Texans, because they have so many holes to fill, would give up the draft capital that people were rumored to believe it's going to take for Sean Payton, a la a first rounder. I would be pleased with Jim Harbaugh for his resume that he's had. I think he's a quality NFL coach. Plus, he's played the quarterback position. And we've talked a lot about the Houston Texans selecting a quarterback in the first round. We've talked to, different ways to do it. We've talked different names on who it would be. Jim Harbaugh knows what it takes to play that position. I think he's good at building up quarterbacks as well. Colin Kaepernick was playing some of his best football under Jim Harbaugh. Alex Smith was playing some good football under Jim Harbaugh. So Harbaugh has shown that he can take pretty good talent and get the most out of pretty good talent. So I would trust Jim Harbaugh with a rookie quarterback, leading an offense, building a good situation around a rookie quarterback. I still like Ben Johnson at Detroit more than anybody else. But Jim Harbaugh would be at the top of my list, and if that's who the Texans hire, I wouldn't be mad at it.
No, Ben Johnson's a more logical, smart choice for today's NFL and for a guy the Texans should be looking at. But the one that's going to get more attention, the one that's going to draw more eyeballs, the one that even in the locker room is probably going to command more respect right away is Harbaugh. There's no doubt about it.
I agree with that. He probably carries a little bit more of that.
The clout and the cachet.
As somebody obviously invested in both of these guys, I think it's kind of crazy you would rather take Ben Johnson.
Really?
Like, I get the ceiling of a Ben Johnson for sure, and like I don't want him to leave because I think he's played a big role in the offense for the Lions, but I mean, Jim Harbaugh has had success literally everywhere he's ever gone.
That's true.
Like,
it feels safer, right?
I just don't see a scenario where Jim Harbaugh goes back to the NFL and the team's not good. Like maybe he does it when you Super Bowl.
I disagree. With
I think he would take any of the. I think he would take the Texans job if it was the only offered. I think he would take the Colts job right now. I think he would take the Panthers job right now.
That's not what I meant. I meant like wherever he goes, they're going to have success.
Oh, I thought you meant currently.
No, I could see him taking a bad job. I think that's in play.
I think the Colts job is the Michigan scenario in the NFL. He played there. He's loved there.
Yeah.
People think he's great there. He could walk right in like he did in Michigan, and immediately he has that cachet and extra support.
I absolutely believe Harbaugh could go to an opportunity that doesn't look super appealing. I believe the Texans are in play for sure. I think wherever Harbaugh goes, they're going to have success. Ben Johnson could be great. He could absolutely suck as a head coach.
See, this could be on the Ben Johnson front. The one thing I'm leery about is Joe Brady. The LSU passing game coordinator that got all the hype after Burrow and winning the national championship, and then he was fired at Carolina. And Ben Johnson, for as good as he's done, and he's done a hell of a job in Detroit, but that's 1 year. And so I'd be a little leery after 1 year going, this is the guy I want to lead my entire locker room, my football team, and all the things we saw that David Culley was overmatched for. I'm not saying that he's going to be David Culley. Yeah. But there's a lot more to it than just calling offensive play.
The difference between Brady and Johnson, though, is that Brady had Joe Burrow, Jamar Chase at LSU that 1 year, whereas Ben Johnson in Detroit has dudes that people thought was chopped liver. Like, he's totally rebuilt Jared Goff and his, like, and status in the
Saint
NFL.
Brown and Swift. And
Those are talented players.
Williams, like, they're talented.
Right, but I look at Ben Johnson more that he's turned Goff into a good player again in the NFL and that he's taken a Detroit offense that had some pieces and has made them really good. Who would you like as the Texans head coach? Is Jim Harbaugh, does that move the needle for you? Would you be pleased with that? 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Let's go out to the HRP listener line. We're talking about would you be okay? How would you feel if Jim Harbaugh is the next Texans head coach? He wants an NFL job desperately. If he's the next Texans head coach, how would you feel? 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRP listener line, get Gary in here. Gary, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Gary?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, the sexy pitch coach deal. I don't think most coaches or any coach that started out coming out their first year or so are being labeled as a sexy coach. I think Belichick, pre and post Brady, has done nothing.
That's not true. Gary, that's not true. Gary, I'll let you finish your point, but hold on. You can't say that Bill Belichick has done nothing after Tom Brady when he helped a rookie quarterback and Mac Jones get to the playoffs.
Make the playoffs.
If you're going to the playoffs with a rookie quarterback, that's more than nothing, Gary.
You guys are correct, but just let me finish it, if you don't mind.
Yeah,
go ahead. You guys are correct. He took a rookie quarterback to the playoffs. You're right. Well, what I was saying before I got thrown out, the Rams head coach, that young, sexy head coach, and until he traded for Stafford, I'm going somewhere with it.
The one that got to the Super Bowl with Jared Goff, that guy?
Oh, man. Yeah, I was almost finished because I know you got other callers. Harbaugh, you said he had Alex Smith. When he was with Kansas City, I think he had a winning record at that time, too. And when he got with 49ers, he had that varnished defense, which led them there. I think, if I'm not mistaken, he did have that winning record before he went to the 49ers. Nick Foles, I think Nick Foles was the only, whoever that coach was, had a subpar Nick Foles. But
Doug
most
Peterson.
Of those Super Bowl winning coaches or participating coaches had elite quarterbacks, except for Harbaugh's brother when they had that Ray Lewis in the barn.
That wasn't Harbaugh wasn't the coach then. That was Billick, right? That was Billick that was the coach back then.
Harbaugh also had
the stones
to draft Kaepernick, bench out, never bring. I think Alex Smith got hurt. He put Kaepernick in the lineup, and then when Alex Smith was healthy, just rode Kaepernick the rest of the way. Said, "This is my guy who we're going with."
Yeah, that was that. We appreciate you listening, Gary. We always appreciate you calling in. You're always welcome. There was a lot of facts that were incorrect there.
a few.
That young, sexy coach that didn't have any success until he had Matthew Stafford, yet he went to the Super Bowl with Jared Goff.
Sean McVay.
Went to the Super Bowl as Jared Goff, and then he mentioned that...
Are there pictures that we're not aware about, or is he just in GQ?
I like the one where he said that Harbaugh didn't win anything unless he had Ray Lewis.
That would be his...
That was in 2000. Harbaugh didn't take over until 2008, almost a decade later. Now, he did win with Flacco. Harbaugh did win with Flacco.
Johnny Boy?
The question with Flacco has always been, is he elite? 713-780-ESPN.
Billick was the Super Bowl champion coach, right?
Well, they won two. They won one with Billick and with Ray Lewis in 2000.
Yeah, right.
And then they got rid of Trent Dilfer that year. They got rid of him quickly. They got rid of him right away. And then they won it again in 12 with Flacco. And when Flacco had that elite postseason. One rumor that I read today that's just wild to me, and I really don't believe it. They're saying that if the Dolphins end up losing on Sunday, I think they would have had this, like, weren't they 8-3 at one point? So they would have lost six in a row.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be 8-9. There's rumors that if the Dolphins go from 8-3 to 8-9, that everybody's job is going to be at risk. If the Dolphins fire fire Mike McDaniel and the Texans have the possibility of signing Mike McDaniel as a free agent now because the Dolphins got rid of him. They fired him. If Mike McDaniel is a possibility and the Houston Texans do not hire Mike McDaniel, I'll riot. I'll never be a Houston Texan fan again. Hire my guy. There's no way they fire him, you mean?
I could see them clear house on players. Because they've actually gone way out of their way to try and overload and go for it mode, as we've talked about.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any way in hell after 1 year you're going to put this on McDaniel. McDaniel inherited Tua. He's tried to make something of Tua. Now they're saying Tua might be too fragile to be the long-term quarterback of the Dolphins, too. And they're trying to think of a veteran quarterback that could come in place of Tua. So with that ownership, yeah, there could be a lot of desperate moves made. I don't think after 1 year, that guy who basically was able to get them to win as much as they actually were winning, even with Tua hurt so much,
yeah.
I don't think you put the blame on him.
I wouldn't. I wouldn't fire him either. Ultimately, I don't think that they do. But that would be an interesting name to hit the coaching carousel if the Texans are in the business. And 2787 says that they shouldn't be. Not time for a new coach. Dude has had nothing but BS to work with since hired. Media first to crucify the owner before hire. Now it's okay to fire him. Come on, man. 4 exclamation points from 2787. I will say this. I do feel weird talking about the next head coach of the Houston Texans when we're still unsure what the Texans are going to do with Lovie Smith. Like, were we talking about the next head coach of the Texans last year going into the final week of the season with David Culley still at the helm? I don't remember doing that.
I don't either.
I feel like this is uncharted territory. So it does feel kind of weird talking about the next head coach of the Texans whenever... Like, some people are in different places.
We knew before the end of the year, didn't we, that Culley wasn't going to be back for year two?
No, absolutely not. No, it happened after the year.
No, I know when it happened, but I think in our minds.
No way.
No?
I don't think so. I think it was like 50-50 last year.
I really think that we thought by the end of the season that Culley was not going to get another year.
I think it was honest. Yeah, I think I'm with Jeremy on the 50-50.
Really?
Yeah.
It wasn't that, because it was 1 year. It was 1 year in the rebuild.
But he had made so many dumb decisions and screw-ups.
I might even say it was leaning more towards that he was coming back than leaving.
And there was a lot of positive media coverage nationally, too, saying that David Culley won four games more than anticipated with the Texans. He should be brought back. I think it was 50-50. I think it was a coin flip. I think that it was actually greater than how we feel about Lovie Smith right now, which it probably should be, 4 wins versus 2 wins.
I don't recall... But I find it hard to believe that with all that we witnessed last year, that we weren't at least talking about the fact that he might not be
back. Oh, we were talking about it, but we weren't talking about who the next head coach would be until he was fired.
Okay. Yeah, right.
Whereas right now, Lovie Smith's still employed. There's still a decent percentage of people that think Lovie Smith, one, shouldn't be fired. Two, there's a lot of people that think the Texans won't fire him. And yet we're still talking about the next head coach, which is kind of... I don't know what the word to describe it. It's kind of weird, to be honest with you.
And remember, how long ago was it when we were trying to set percentages on if Lovie would be back or not?
We were like, I was 70-30 that they would get rid of him.
50-50.
You were 50-50. Have you moved?
I know everybody else has.
Yeah.
I still think that
Brendan was 37.
I think there's still a good chance, a decent chance that Lovie returns.
Out of curiosity, what's the deadline where, like, if it hasn't happened yet, that you guys are starting to go, wait a second, is he back?
The draft.
Oh, no. It's way before that. No,
it's got to be like the week after the NFL season.
I was going to say I was going to say Tuesday.
Yeah. Was that because you want to be looked over by the time you make the move to bed?
Well, that's the day they usually do it in the NFL. They call it Black Monday.
Black Monday.
Yeah,
right.
That's the day. Like, the draft isn't until April 27th.
If he survives Black Monday,
yeah,
he's back.
I agree. I agree. And I think that the Texans will also announce it. Like, I think that the Texans will make a declaration whether they, yeah, I mean, if they fire him, obviously they do.
More so, too, they don't want to miss out on any coaching candidates if they, in fact, would have their eye on anybody. I know that Josh McCown is not going to be on everybody's top of everybody's list. He'll still be there for them.
I don't think so.
But I think that if he, you know, if they truly want to have the pick of the litter of everybody out there and be in on the conversations, then you have to do it right away. I think because they're just not really good at these kind of decision-making things, I think they could let it linger a while.
So you're still 50-50. What's more likely, the Lovie Smith leaves town or Brendan leaves town first?
Ooh, boy.
I think it's close.
I think
it's tight. Well, I think Lovie it might Smith be interesting.
Lovie Smith's a full-time employee, right?
Yeah.
Of the Texans?
Yeah.
I think the part-timer goes first.
So it's easier to cut ties with the part-timer? Yeah. So you haven't moved. You're still 50-50. How do you feel about that, Brendan, with Lovie? Because you were like 70% chance he's back.
I think I might be a little bit close. I mean, I don't know. I would say I'm still in that ballpark. If I've shifted at all, it's a little bit towards the thought that he's gone, but it's not significant.
So if you're 60-70% sure that Lovie's back, right? Isn't it weird we're talking about the next head coach of the Texans?
It's very weird.
Like, I don't think that this is like really exists other places. Like, usually you're talking about firing your coach or not firing your coach. That's the argument.
I think it's because everybody, like, this isn't, I don't think this is just an us thing. I think the vast majority of people view it as though Lovie won't be the long-term guy here. Even if he's back next year, the expectation is that Lovie is not going to be here 3-4 years from now. And so you almost feel a little bit more okay starting the conversation.
That's probably the answer, but it doesn't go on anywhere else. Like, it's unique to the city of Houston. It's weird. 901-3.
They care more than any other organization in terms of perception.
The Texans?
I do believe so.
I mean, they hired Lovie Smith last year.
Right.
That's a pretty good example of that.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good example of worrying about perception.
I told you, instead of taking a draft pick for J.J. Watt, they made a handshake deal that said, hey, you don't tell anybody we wanted to get rid of you for a cap move.
I don't know if that was good for perception, though. I think that was
keeping... the fact that they didn't have to cut J.J. Watt, I think it was really good for perception.
Well, they did cut him. I mean, they released J.J. Watt.
Well, but it was a mutual thing as opposed to having to come out and
But they kind of got crushed by guys like you and me for not trading him for a fourth or a fifth. You could have had a handshake agreement with J.J. Watt. Hey, go shop yourself to other teams, and then we're going to make a trade with that team for even a fourth or a fifth rounder as opposed to just releasing him for free. I don't think that was as much PR. I think that was more about keeping good with J.J. Watt.
Well, I mean, you can go up and down the list, too. I think even going back to Robert McNair, when we won't take a guy with a bad reputation to even give him a second chance, which was unheard of. But he was always so hyper, you know, worried about for whatever his other reasons behind it and the motivation behind it. But he wouldn't even do that. I think that they're constantly worried. And they're not the only team. I think having worked there and been internal with it as well, the Rockets have been hyper-focused and sensitive on perception for a long time, too. It might be different under Tillman. But I think the Texans would be the most hypersensitive to perception that I've seen.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Something happened yesterday with the Aggie basketball team that we have to talk about. You've probably heard it, but the jokes write themselves. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you all about the good people at Apollo Men's Health yet again, because you're not trying to win an Olympic medal these days. You're trying to win the day. And winning the day gets harder and harder as you get older. And the fact is, when you are trying to find enough energy to work out and do your job and get the to-do list done and the honey-dos and take care of all the needs of the kids and everything, it gets tougher with each passing day. And that's why you need the good people at Apollo Men's Health. For men and women, they have ways to get more energy in your life on a daily basis. It could be as simple as a B12 shot. It could get into hormone therapy in the different ways and the variety of different ways they can administer it. It could also be things about getting into a workout program, starting with a full body composition analysis, and then finding a way to chart your progress so you can see the results that you're getting and the progress that's being made by checking. Body fat is down. Weight loss percentage down, weight is down, things like that, muscle mass going up. Those are things you can chart. On top of that, You can recover quicker with HGH peptide therapy. They have all these different services they offer, and there's got to be a few that could interest you too. Check them out today at ApolloMH.com. Find out the services that they do offer you. If there are a couple that look like that they could do some good for you, make an appointment. Most major insurance is accepted. There's discounts for military personnel and first responders. And when you go in, mention my name, Joel Blank, free B12 shot or a free body composition analysis on your first visit. Then let the process go from there. Answer their questions honestly. Tell them the goals that you're trying to achieve and where you're falling short. They'll put you on a program that works. They'll get you the results you need. They're good people doing great things on a daily basis. It's the people at Apollo Men's Health.
ESPN 97.5. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Did you see what happened with the Texas A&M basketball team yesterday in Gainesville? I am fascinated by this, the how it happened. Here was ESPN yesterday. Do we have the sound here? We have ESPN, no Monaco, right? We don't have Andrew Monaco on the Fightin' Texas Aggie radio network. Here was ESPN yesterday describing what happened as the game and tip-off was approaching.
Todd Golden told moments ago that the game will not start on time because Texas A&M's uniforms were left at the team hotel. So, rush hour traffic being what it is in Gainesville, somebody's got to scoot back there, pick up the jerseys and shorts, and come back to Exact Tech. And until then, Todd Golden and his Gators will get some more shots up, and we will be delayed until we can get this game underway.
I mean, how many Aggies does it take to bring the uniforms to the game? Am I right? Florida's basketball coach afterwards, Golden, I guess. They asked him about it. He pretty much was like, look, it's not ideal. You know, we were ready to play and we had to wait 20 minutes. So he was not too pleased that the Fightin' Texas Aggies forgot their Fightin' Texas Aggie basketball uniforms. I'm blown away by the semantics of this. You've gone to NBA games for most of your life. Mm-hmm. You've been to thousands of them. You know how it works, especially when you're playing in a road game. You take the bus over to the arena, and then immediately from the arena, you're leaving to the charter airplane. I've done the same thing with Houston basketball hundreds of times. You leave the hotel, you take everything with you, you put it on the bus, and then the bus is going to take you straight to the airplane after the game. Like,
that's
the first question
when you're staying overnight.
But sure,
for the most part,
college
you're
basketball.
Absolutely right.
Unless you're playing like a roadie, like UCF, USF.
Right.
But you're not going
right.
to Gainesville in the SEC and not returning to College Station that very night, unless there's weather, things like that. So I'm shocked that like the uniforms got left at the hotel for that purpose alone.
Correct.
Like, how is everything not on the bus with you heading to the arena? The second thing is, like, teams get to the arena, you know, every team's a little bit different, but like the closest that you're ever pushing tip off is like an hour, and that's probably
guys, are there hours and hours before the game and everybody's locker? You have their yep. pregame gear, you have their game gear, you got their shoes, you got everything.
Our guys set up the locker room either the night before or that yep. morning shoot around.
Yep.
So like that's interesting
NBA
caveat
too.
There. But let's just say they didn't take their shoot around that day. They didn't have a chance to practice in Gainesville the day before. Maybe they practiced in College Station before they boarded the flight and left to Gainesville, Florida. Maybe that's the way Buzz does things there with the Aggies. Maybe they never went to the arena. But worst case scenario, you're getting to the arena an hour before tip. Worst case scenario.
Worst case
probably. And probably. And probably 90 minutes. Probably at least 90
hours.
Minutes.
Yes.
Yeah, at least 90 minutes. Worst case scenario, 60 minutes. How do you not realize in the 60 minutes that you got there that the jerseys are not at the arena?
Don't disagree with you, but let me ask you a question because I don't know how it works in college basketball. But obviously, most professional teams have at least two, but definitely one full-time paid equipment manager that's sole responsibility are these type things. So therefore, even if they practiced and then left for the bus, they'd be doing laundry the night before in the team facility, using their facilities to wash and get the uniforms. In the NBA, there's multiple uniforms now that could be used. But for that reason and more, the second bus for the veterans that don't do the early warm-ups, that's still over 2 hours before game time. So I don't know in college, are they – because Buzz kept saying – these intern managers or these volunteer managers, things like that. I got to believe college still has a full-time equipment
guy. No, they're usually equipment managers that
but
are
they're
not
paid by the university. Really?
Like, not really.
So that's where you might have a little leniency.
But even then, like, how are you an hour away from tip-off and your shooting guard's not in his game shorts? Well, what's going on?
Well, I think a lot of teams, too, and again, with the NBA, because they have a variety of different warm-ups and things, too.
Okay, they're in warm-ups, but you have the uniform out.
But you even see it with the NFL guys, too, where they're not going to wear their game gear for pregame in case they sweat it all up.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine.
But it's still, like you said, it's in the locker. It's draped over the jersey's draped over the chair. The shorts are on the seat of the chair. Everything's laid out for them. Yeah, I don't know a scenario in professional sports when the equipment manager isn't there like 3-4 hours before the game and everything's already laid out by the time the first player gets off the first bus and walks into the locker room.
Exactly. Like, I can understand leaving the bag of gear with the uniforms. I can kind of understand that. Not really. Like, that's pretty hard to do, but I can understand that a little bit. I can't understand that they didn't realize this with 60 to 90 minutes left to go before tip-off. Right. They didn't bust it to the hotel. Gainesville's not all that big, and were able to get back before the game was supposed to tip-off.
So let's also take through the pregame kind of scheduling, right? Everybody does their pregame warm-up. Yeah. Then at a certain point, the floor is closed and both teams go back to their locker room to get the game plan and meet with the coaches.
Yeah.
At the same time, most times that's when they're putting on their game uniform. You don't think one player stands up and goes,
exactly.
I don't have a jersey.
So I went, exactly. Like, the semantics of this do not add
they
up
don't
to me.
At all.
And, like, you've been to NBA games for thousands of games, and it's pretty similar to how the college game works. I've been to hundreds of games.
I'm just shocked that colleges don't pay an equipment guy.
Like, they have guys on the staff, but their equipment isn't their title.
Okay.
Like, they kind of oversee it, but they're not the one handling the uniform. Like, student managers are usually ones handling the uniform.
That's crazy to me.
Now, some of them are paid, but, like, they're not, you know, kind of, like, part-time, you know, middle, like, not a lot. But anyways, I can't believe that, the jerseys did not get there. Two, I can't believe that they didn't figure out the jerseys were not there by the time the game got tipped off. Florida's coach was really mad about this. Texas A&M got assessed a technical foul.
They did.
They were trailing in this game before the game ever tipped off, which is hilarious. A&M even said that they would play in their practice jerseys but decided not to for whatever reason. Tinfoil hat here. You guys tell me, was this calculated? Was this Buzz Williams playing a little bit of chess against the Florida Gators that they would have to get cold? Kind of like in boxing where the champion always walks in second and you see the boxer take 10 minutes to get to the ring.
But
they're going through their entourage. They're walking slowly. Why? To make sure that their opponent is cold. Did you allow your mind at all to go into the conspiracy theory where Buzz Williams orchestrated this whole thing?
A&M was favored, right?
I don't know.
I think they were like the heavy favorite.
I don't look
in
at college basketball lines. I'm not allowed to do that.
Okay. They're the better team.
Not much, man.
They're
struggling.
9-5, are they not?
Are they like Florida's 7-7 though? So like going into the game, they were 8-5 versus 7-6.
Florida hasn't hardly been competitive. A&M got off to a slow start, but A&M was supposed to. This was be the season that Buzz really gets it going. But I don't think there was enough motivation for a Buzz Williams coach team, and he always kind of bills himself as being a very, you know, forthright,
he does,
religious
and he is,
person.
And he is.
Yeah, I don't see Buzz doing something like this. I could see if you're going into, like, number one Gonzaga's gym.
Oh, Florida was favored by 7.
Were they really?
Yeah.
See, this,
Florida
what you're suggesting.
Florida was favored by 7.
I'm with Joel. This feels like.
I don't really don't believe it, but I'm not going to lie to you and say my mind didn't go
there. This feels like a mid-major going to a 1 seed.
Yeah, exactly.
How do you not get your jerseys in time?
Miami of Ohio going to Gonzaga and you pull this, I totally get it, and I would be all for it. But if you're going up against a conference foe that isn't completely dog snot and you're at, I don't see it.
Look, I really don't either. I just do not know how they did not have their jerseys in time. Even if you forget it at the hotel, how are your jerseys not there in time?
We've seen players go to the scorer's table
before
and forget their jersey.
Yeah.
We've seen a player do it. But to me, there's just too many different variables that are normally boxes checked well before they take the court for the official pregame warm-up to where before you get in layup lines, everybody knows they're not wearing their game jersey.
Exactly, man. This blew my mind.
Now, the only thing I can say is they realized that.
0793 says Aggies can't play chess.
No, but here's the thing.
That's mean.
The only thing I can say that where we can kind of piece this together is they realized during the team meeting or when they did come back in to change, it wasn't there. The managers thought they had time.
Which should be 60
to get
minutes.
Wherever they were and get back in time unless they ran into traffic or whatever, and then realized they didn't get back in time.
I guarantee you if that situation happens in Gainesville, you got a police escort. You have a police escort.
I don't think that to help the road team, they're going to do that.
To get the game started on time? Absolutely they would do that.
I don't know. You think so?
This hurt Florida.
Yeah.
It made Florida cold. They were 7-point favorites in this game.
I'm surprised they were favorites because the way the write-up was,
neither one's been
they weren't a very good team.
I mean, Aggies won by three. It was a tight game. They won 66-63.
But it was basically,
and that's only because Florida was cold.
But I'm saying what I was reading was that the Aggies were definitely clearly expected to win by the writer.
They have struggled,
and they have struggled. Obviously, I know that too. Is it because this was the year you and I talked about that Buzz was finally going to turn it around, and then he got off to a horrendous start, losing to teams he had no business to losing to, but. There's too many boxes to check off where there was way too many different ways someone sends up a red flag. Unless they say we don't have the jerseys, the equipment guys freak out. They're like, we can get them here. We can get them in time. Just go through warm-ups without them. And before we get into lineups and introductions, we'll have them to you. And then they ran into traffic.
Look, I don't believe that conspiracy theory either, honestly. Can't believe they didn't have the uniforms in time. That blows my mind, if I'm being completely honest. It wasn't the only news that A&M made yesterday.
Yeah.
A&M hired offensive coordinator Bobby Petrino, who ultimately I think is a good hire. He's a good offensive mind. And they needed a play caller that's not named Jimbo Fisher. What I don't like about this, though, is that Petrino took the UNLV offensive coordinator job like 2-3 weeks ago. I hate when college coaches take a job, and I know this happens all the time. There's nothing that's going to fix
Kingsbury
it. It just rubs me wrong.
Kingsbury took the USC offensive coordinator job, and then he jumped?
That's a little different because he took the OC job at USC and became the head coach at Arizona. That's not – and I understand that UNLV OC, A&M OC is not like a lateral job because A&M's up here, UNLV's down here. Mm-hmm. But it's the same position. It's still an offensive coordinator. And look, nothing's going to fix it. It's never going to go away. But it rubs me the wrong way when a coach takes a job at a lower school and then takes the same exact position at a higher school 2 weeks later.
Well,
it drives me nuts.
You and I both know, and it happens more on the professional front than it does the college front. But if you're in discussions with a certain team, college, or organization – you better bet that the discussion has been going on a while and word travels. And if you thought that there was a chance that you might be getting the A&M job or an interview for that, you darn sure know you could have delayed UNLV.
What's interesting, though, is that Petrino was rumored for the A&M offensive coordinator job before he took the UNLV offensive coordinator
That's
job.
That's what I'm saying. So the word was already out there, so you didn't have to take the first job and to guarantee that you got the second job.
I am shocked.
We did call that Jimbo would be hiring an offensive coordinator well before he hired
I'm shocked him. That Bobby Petrino would do something so immoral. This just stuns me
go
that he would
motorcycle.
Do something so unethical. I am shocked.
Get your side piece
Bobby
and go
Petrino
ride your motorcycle.
All right, that's it for us. Thanks to Brendan, part-time Brendan, for doing partly the hard work. He's Blank, I'm Branham. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. The Wheelhouse is next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
This is Heisman Trophy winner Troy Smith, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.